Your consciousness is literally creating your reality. And this is backed by neuroscience and psychology and quantum mechanics and spirituality in a big way.
When you value your time and you know that time is finite, you actually want to savor those moments. You don't want to spend your time chasing a trade. You just save your money in something that can't be abstracted away or inflated away. And it gives you sovereignty, it gives you peace.
Let me tell you what you're doing right now is that you are convincing me and sharing your interpretation of reality. That perspective of reality empowers you. But I could jump on another podcast with somebody who's like, Ethereum all the way and Bitcoin's a hoax. And they're going to have a completely different interpretation. But this is the choice that we have. Does your interpretation of reality empower you? And if it doesn't, you are a victim. So Bitcoin is also basically a byproduct of a collective conscious understanding sense. There's studies in meditation, 1,000 people came together. Hospitalization rates dropped, crime dropped, the economy strengthened. In 30 days, people could not explain it. And that's what the Bitcoin community is doing.
Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Joe Hain with me. He is a childhood friend of my husband's, and I had the pleasure of meeting him a couple of years ago. We took a trip on spring break, so it's actually pretty amazing that this is the anniversary of when we first met because it is, again, spring break. So welcome, Joe, and it is such a pleasure to have you on the show. At the time that we also met, I hadn't even been doing a podcast, so it's just so amazing that after meeting you and hearing about your journey and your story and what you are doing now, that I'm able to have you here so you can share with other people.
Thank you, Stacey. Bitcoin Nova. That's how you introduce yourself when we met too. Yeah. No, just kidding. Well,
yeah. I'm like, did I actually just see how easy it is?
Yeah. George, Stacey's husband, and I went to high school together and still keep in touch and everything. So yeah, it was really cool because we were talking a lot about just consciousness and like training your energy and your perspective, your mindset to create, manifest, influence your reality. And you were really jazzed about that. And, you know, when two people meet who have the same kind of excitement for belief systems and everything, it's a really natural, like abundant, fun energy. And so that's what we were all like coming together and experiencing a bit of that. And as you kind of mentioned, it may have sparked a little bit of stuff in your life. And here you are really pursuing your passions. So you should be proud of yourself.
Thank you, know,
for doing this. And it's a lot of work and it's a lot of commitment and it's a lot of navigating even potential like setbacks and obstacles and rejection. And you have to be very resilient. And I believe that is all, you know, what we discuss, it is all a conscious intention. And that determines success or failure, you know. So
yeah. And a lot of what you talk about is, you know, believing in yourself and, you know, the self-love. And that's something that you have to do to start something new. You know, there is fear involved and you can have insecurity about yourself. But just knowing that, you know, you have information that people would like to hear and being able to share your voice, it is something that takes that level of bravery. But also just, you know, you have to let go of the fear and you have to just be okay with change and starting something new and even not knowing where that road will take you, but just knowing that you enjoy it and it's a passion. So it's also a form of presence, getting used to enjoying what you're doing, you know, and that's what I truly do love. I love to speak to people to learn about their journeys and how they got to where they are today. So that's exactly what I want to do with you here. I want you to share your story and, you know, tell us about, you know, how you got to this point for being a mindset coach, for being a public speaker. And, you know, you talk a lot about neuroscience and just everything about this mindset. Yeah. So let's start off with telling people who you are, how you got to this point.
So, yeah. And we'll talk. I want to circle back too, because you said some great things about fear and starting off. And so, like, I know that people are listening and to you and they're getting direction and inspiration or, even just like, you know, adding to their artillery of what they're doing and how they're doing stuff. So we'll talk a little bit about injecting a very efficient positive, optimistic, but kind of brilliant mindset in order to be successful. So we'll circle back on that. But yeah, I was living in Chicago and basically in a corporate world in like 2008, 9, 10, 11. And I was working in retail, a director of a high-end like luxury watch shop out of Switzerland and everything downtown. And I had a really good life. So I had an amazing wife, great circle of friends, really good community, a lot of fun, great lifestyle. And then like my immediate family, very healthy, very supportive, very, very tight. And I was healthy and decent looking, making some good money. Like I had a lot of these boxes checked that, you know, society deems important, right? Degrees and experience and all these things. But I couldn't see a lot of that. And I was suffering from a lot of like just daily anxiety, stress, and anger. Like a lot of things would make me upset. And I was kind of like an escapist. Like I wanted to make a lot of money and like move to Costa Rica or like live on an island somewhere where I didn't have to deal with having to get up and snoozing your alarm 10 times and like dreading the day and then like numbing and coming home and like having to like repeat it all again. And I just felt like kind of imprisoned, especially with my profession. And I was good at it, but it wasn't like fulfilling me and giving me purpose and meaning. So while I had all these boxes checked that were very important, but also like you would think that that was enough. That would be the fulfillment that like one would be like, okay, cool. I've made it. I've arrived. It wasn't. I was always just kind of obsessed with a future where everything would work out and I'd finally like have to stop doing things I didn't want to do anymore, in a sense, money and profession and all that. And then, you know, life actually humbled me. And my wife at the time was diagnosed with cancer. And that just kind of catapulted us into a completely different life. It was like living one movie where, you know, things are pretty amazing, even though the main star is suffering from, you know, anxiety and anger and, you know, stress and all that. Then you're jumping into this like intense thriller where mortality was on the line. And so it was many months of fighting, and then things got real, real bad. And she developed like a dozen lesions, tumors in her brain. And we had to like move out of our apartment in Chicago. We had to move in with my folks. She had to have life-saving brain surgery. And then that just unraveled into like, you know, you think you know what anxiety is. You think you know what fear is until you're caring for like the love of your existence in that space. And then you're just really dealt with this kind of nightmare life. And it was just kind of excruciating because I was just so scared of like losing her, and things were exceptionally serious. And so that, while it was terrifying because I had to be the knight in shining armor to her, like hopeful and spiritual and supportive and empowering, but behind the scenes, you know, you close that door, I was withering away because I was deathly afraid and stuff. And so you
can learn. Pause there for 1 second, because that's one of the things that, I mean, even now I've know this story, but just you talking about this is so, I mean, I feel for you, because you said the love of my existence. It wasn't even the love of my life, how people say, you know. So when I think about what you went through, and again, you think you're struggling in life until something like this happens, and it was, I can't, just knowing you and knowing that happened to you. And I couldn't picture myself in that same situation with the love of my existence and something happening. I don't know how you move on, pretty much. So that's why your journey continues from there, which is incredible. So cool.
Thank you. But yeah, no, I mean, it's really hard to imagine. And that's why, you don't really know this until later, but those experiences are because they slow down time, and your future that, you know, I was always like the escapist and wanting to plan the future. All this stuff, like my perspective, kind of tumbled back into the present moment. And I wasn't concerned about a future. I wasn't thinking about buying a house and what I'm gonna do for work and this, that. I was just like, how do we get through today? You know, I remember being like planning, like with, because I was her provider, also protector and caretaker. So it was like bathing, feeding, you know, carrying her around. And I had the support of my family too. But doing that while I had my full-time gig, and we even had a health and wellness business, that I would be like, okay, just make it through the week. And it was like, the week? That's 7 days. There's a billion things. I had 50 protocols just to do.
And you have to set aside your feelings about this, because like you said, you couldn't just break down in front of her when she needs strength.
Yeah, 100%. And so I had to be very, very strong and not vulnerable in front of her. But I would see that I was trying to work the same ways I was working before, of like getting through the week and like, you know, that, and that was overwhelming, and it was way too much. So then I was like, okay, just try to manage the next couple of days. That was too much. Then it was like, just try to get through today. Then that was too much. And then it was like, just focus on now. Just try to do the best you can in the next hour. And so I learned presence. I learned not to exist beyond the moment through suffering, but still, it's a great lens on how to live life. And it's one of the things I teach about liberating oneself from suffering. And so I was also learning pockets of extreme intense beauty, finding the beauty and the gratitude through presence. Like, she couldn't stand up, and I'd have to like come and like clutch her elbows and then pick her up from the chair, like squat. And then she would be dizzy, and we would stand there and kind of dance while she like gathered her mind and her body and everything for like 30 or 60 seconds. And we were just slow dancing, not even recognizing, but like that was like a little moment we shared that was of intense beauty. And so I was training my mind, you know, unconsciously in a sense, and my consciousness to know what it meant to be present. Because in that moment, I wasn't suffering the anxieties of like, is she going to live or is she going to die? You know, like none of that existed. I was fully, purely, undilutedly like focused on that experience of dancing. And so there were things like that.
Look how so much of our lives we take time for granted that we have to do those things all day long, and we don't, you know. So it's amazing to think that, yes, you took that moment and you relished it, like you enjoyed every second of that. And it's like, you know, time can just, a whole week goes by and you're like, oh, what did I even do all week? And you're just stressed out. But then that moment feels like it lasted so long because you remember it so clearly, because you actually paid attention, you know, and you focused on it.
Here we are talking about it some 12 years later or whatever it is, right? So I learned that stuff, but I didn't know it until I had to kind of reflect back. And then that was given to me because basically she just continued to do worse. And one day that I'm in the room and with the ICU, I was sleeping at hospitals over 60 nights and taking to the ER, like really extreme. It's very, very challenging. We just found ourselves in the ICU, and the doctor had told me she's not in there anymore. Like enough stuff had happened where she had officially lost the battle, and we had to say goodbye. And this is another thing, you don't know what's happening at that moment until you reflect on it. But she was my wife, my best friend. We had a business together, and you know, my lover, my roommate, but also like the future, in my mind, the future woman of my children, the future mother of my children. And you know, we're going to buy a house together. So there was just what I had established in society, where you know, I had the bachelor's degree and I had the great job. All these things are these identity tokens that we kind of like go around in society and be like, look at me, I'm important, I have value, just kind of basically seeking acceptance, right?
Yeah.
And so I had a lot of that tethered to her, being a husband, being a best friend, all that. And then when she took her last breath, I didn't just lose her. I lost all of my identities that I held on to a lot as well. But here I was living and breathing. And so I saw later on that that was just a facade for me, for my ego, for myself to feel good about itself, but it really didn't exist. And so from that last breath, I knew that I could not live the same life anymore. And so I made the choice to quit work, take whatever money we had in savings, insurance, and all this other stuff, and just start traveling the world. And, you know, I wanted to go volunteer, and I headed off to South America buying like a one-way trip. She was kind of speaking into my life from the beyond. Again, it gets kind of wild, and I'm a very analytical minded person, and, you know, man's man, likes riding motorcycles and chopping wood and doing cool things with his friends. But I was getting into this spiritual realm and like awakening to that my existence is potentially not what I've been taught this whole time, and that there was more to learn about consciousness and the afterlife and all this stuff. And so I embarked on this journey, traveling the world, volunteer and help others, children and other volunteers, teaching martial arts and English and traveling through South America. But really, I was beat up from grief, from losing her. I was in anguish a lot. And so I had to learn that I was out there not to live a new life, but to try to save myself, to try to heal. Because I was having really bad thoughts where you don't want to die, but you don't want to live. And you're caught in this space that's pretty scary between. So
but the thing that you mentioned, that you were getting messages from beyond, would want a recap, or maybe people would be interested in hearing how you received those messages. And it also maybe might give a lot of people comfort, because people have so many questions about, you know, death and being separated from someone they love. And that really, I mean, I believe that there's more than just this life, but hearing that was, and again, it was a few years ago. So I would love to hear it.
Yeah. So basically, she had her cell phone. This is how it kind of started, is she had her cell phone. She passed away and I was getting messages on her cell phone. And then I got one in particular. She said like, "Hey, checking up on you, honey. How's everything?" And I talked to the woman. I was like, "Hey, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but Jessica passed away a couple of days ago." And she's like, "Well, I'm a good friend of hers, but I'm not in America. My name's, you know, Tani. I saw her name and everything." And she's like, "This is going to sound weird, but I'm a spiritual medium. And I think that Jessica is reaching out to me to talk to you." So I was just, you know, like my analytical mind was like, "What's this crazy lady want?" But my grieving heart was like, "Well, what did she have to say?" And so I had a conversation with her, and she told me all this stuff that she really should not have known, could not have known. And then she was just saying, "Jessica wants you to write a book." And I didn't know what that meant at the time. And then she also said, "Jessica wants you to read a book." And one of the books was about the afterlife, about this man who communicates with his sister after he passes away. And the sister wrote the book and everything. It's called The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. And basically, I just learned that she was communicating with me through dreams and like little signs, animals, people giving messages and songs, and just kind of synchronicities that were happening very frequently as I was traveling throughout all South America and everything. And so I was just getting, I would call guidance and encouragement. It's not like somebody was coming down and being like, "Here's what to do, and this is that." It was more of things that could not have been a coincidence were happening so frequently that it had to be something else.
And did she ever give you any indication she wanted you to write a book?
Yeah, that was the first, before passing, no. I wasn't a writer or anything, but I started journaling about my experience afterwards, and people were like following that on social media. I was just kind of elevating that to help catharsis wise, to like kind of process and everything. And so, you know, it was just something to help me out. But basically, I kept doing this and traveling and then learning about my own like past lives and reincarnation. And then I was traveling the world and I would study like self-realization and Hinduism in India, and I would go to China, and I was trekking through Nepal and Tibet and studying Buddhism and Taoism and Confucianism and Europe when I was there, studying Stoicism and Christianity. And
was this all because of a journey that led you to want to understand the afterlife? Is that why you went on that journey?
It was just more of, I didn't know what to do with my life, and I didn't want to go back and work my job and do all that. That felt like a disgrace. Like I was dishonoring what I had just to go return and be like, I'm just going to try to make the most of it. And I hated my life. I hated Chicago because it was a representation of everything I had lost, you know, not just her, but like my whole life. And so I was kind of running from life, but there's the term everywhere you go, there you are, right? And so I was bringing my consciousness, my mindset with me. And I started understanding by studying self-help and religions and esoteric spiritual stuff and all these other things that my interpretation of life was actually causing the suffering, not my circumstance. It wasn't the fact that she passed away. It wasn't the fact that I had like lost all this stuff. It was the fact that the way I was looking at that was giving me all the suffering, which anybody may be hearing that for the first time, you'll be like, that sounds like bullshit. Like that, you know, it's not. It's really that life truly is pretty much neutral in a sense. And we have a high.
It took you time, though, to notice that after you were outside of it, right?
Years. Like this was a process going, traveling, you know, 30 plus countries and studying all this stuff and continuing to just invest in my personal development where this stuff started really like taking hold. And I would watch my mind. That was the best book.
That's what it was. I love that you just said that because I remember after meeting you, that was the video that I felt like stuck with me, that whenever I would have a moment, I would observe myself. I would get outside and be like, would I like to be friends with that person?
Yes. It's called metacognition. That's exactly like in neuroscience, but basically in spirituality, it's ego versus self. Ego is that voice in our head that sometimes pulls us down, that looks bad or shames others or is judgmental or negative. Self is the observer, is watching this secondary entity have these conversations. And again, they call it metacognition, where you are separating from the thinking mind and the observing kind of conscious awareness. And so I was getting really good at that and understanding that the ego had like a character. It would do the same thing over and over again, and it would kind of be different in small aspects, but it kind of had like this nature of always assuming the worst, always being negative, always thinking about the future and like worrying and having anxiety, looking back at the past and regretting or shaming myself or blaming others, finding fault in the current moment now. So I was noticing and kind of mapping out my consciousness and how it would function. And I noticed like these similarities. And then I started looking at other people and I'm like, they're doing all the same shit I'm doing. It's just a different circumstance, but they're concerned about, you know, how what life isn't, as opposed to what they should be appreciative for, being worried about the future or regretting the past. But it was a different story, a different movie, you know, different storyline for them as opposed to me. But the ego, the mind, was interpreting their story the same way. So I'm like, holy cow, I'm mapping out consciousness and getting a really good grasp on how this works.
Yeah.
Studying everything and kind of obsessing over this stuff.
And that was the moment that I think every time I would react, I would think, now I'm going to look at that ego from outside and think like that. That's what I would try to do. Every time I felt myself either getting angry or frustrated or not having patience with something, or why am I getting mad about this? I would do those things. I felt like I was listening to your advice.
And that in and of itself basically like tempers the reaction that we don't choose, right? Because you're stepping outside of it. So how can you just be reacting if you are the one observing the reaction? Do you see it dilutes that reaction? And the more you're able to do that, the more you're basically retraining your consciousness not to react, but you're choosing a response. And that's literally what personal development boils down to in like when you're navigating at first, is reconditioning your reaction to be a chosen response to life instead of just a knee-jerk, well, I'm angry and explode, or I'm impatient, explode, whatever it is. And so
it gives you that aerial view of, you know, instead of being in it where you think you see destruction and chaos, you're just flying overhead and being like I'm in space and I'm looking down at the earth. And
yep. Very good. I love the analogy that I felt like before, that I was an actor in a play, like on stage, and like whatever reaction I was having was justified. If I was angry or impatient or anxious, I felt like I was in it. You know, I was wearing the outfit and then going and playing the part, reading my lines, But as soon as you start becoming the observer, you take yourself out of the play and in the audience. And from the audience's view, you're just watching this almost play out, but you don't have to be a participant. And so you can choose a different kind of experience for yourself. And the more that you do this, you train your consciousness to kind of work for you instead of you kind of being enslaved by it. So,
okay. And that's, we're going to jump back into the timeline of how this went, but I want to remember that thought because the whole exiting and observing is something that reminds me of the idea of Bitcoin and the network and how it works is something that I want to get back to. So, and I know that that's not the main point of this episode. It's just making connections to Bitcoin and things like, you know, things that we see about healthy human behavior and mindset and how that can relate to Bitcoin. But yeah, that was, thank you for breaking that down because that was such an important part for me. So you spent this, you know, this time learning these things. You felt like you were, even when it came to your situation with your wife, then you're looking at it like you're watching a play and knowing that you're receiving messages and things that you were told and things that you experienced that you can't explain. And then being told to read that book that you know, that came through to you saying, read this book and write your own. Those are things that, you know, you feel like you're almost outside of this play with her, not knowing that that was a thing before. So I don't know, that's.
Yeah, it was very surreal because you're like living this one life in Chicago, everything's like, okay. And then you're just like, holy cow, you know, I would have these existential like moments of like, I am in Honduras right now, like driving on an old Land Rover and drove it back from Costa Rica to Chicago. And you're just like, how did I get into this reality? And like, you know, I'm having conversations with my wife, learning about consciousness and mindset and everything. It's still very surreal because, you know, catch you guys up too, but like with my life now, all that continued for a while, but I was developing this self-mastery of understanding that if my consciousness was responsible for the suffering or the salvation of my circumstance, depending on how I was interpreting reality, then I could train it to influence my experience, to have a good time, to like at least be at peace. But then I learned about just some laws, like there's a bunch of universal laws for what we can create, that like one is the all is the one, that we are all connected. And quantum mechanics proves this with quantum entanglement, that everything is from a source, the Big Bang, and everything that was ever created is connected to one another. And so it's just kind of like what spirituality talks about, like, you know, we are all one, Buddha, you know, saying, you know, after enlightenment that we are all connected in that stuff. Christ saying this stuff that, you know, as above, so below. And so noticing one, that law, and then the second law being that the present moment is the only moment that exists. The past doesn't exist. It was just the present moment. The future, when it comes, it's just going to be the present moment. So that's a big one because we tend to focus so much outside of the present moment when that's our real opportunity, but yet we're not existing within it. And if we're not.
And that's an interesting thought that you mentioned that, because that's like when you think about the idea of time travel, it's not that you are, you know, when you think about going back in time or the future, if all exists is the present, but then how you use that time is so important because it could either go by really quick on fast forward, or it can feel like you never escape that moment and you're stuck in it. You know, you're stuck in the past, or so it could feel like time travel within your own brain, even though there's no such thing.
Because people, there is though, you're completely right, because people are not attending to the present moment. And I'll tell you why in this podcast, there's like three core problems, but they're not taught how to be present. And so then they live life always trying to cross another finish line or summit another mountain or achieve another goal or waiting for some other thing to happen to give them salvation in a sense. And it never comes, because when you achieve something, your ego just creates a new finish line, a new summit. So you never actually arrive. And then it's finding all the parts in the past that we made mistakes, and it beats us up, and it makes us feel terrible, or somebody else mistreated us, and it makes us feel like a victim our entire lives. So that's just the way it works. But we can train ourselves. I like to call it like upgrading our software and our hardware, both our biology and our psyche, which is proven again by neuroscience and psychology, that we can upgrade and then we are experiencing more presence, which means life slows down and it gets more enriched and it gets more fulfilling because we're literally living and aware of that instead of trying to exist outside of the present moment. And so that is the second law. And the third one that I like to share, because there's multiple ones, but this is the one you and I were discussing that we were real excited about, is that consciousness creates reality. It's not like it influences and your mind is like kind of like, well, it interprets it. Your consciousness is literally creating your reality. And this is backed by neuroscience and psychology and quantum mechanics and spirituality in a big way. Science of frequency as well. Quantum mechanics is basically saying that like everything exists in potentiality and there has to be observation of consciousness into reality in order for it to choose a singularity. Like all these subatomic particles are just existing in like wave format.
Is it like Schrodinger's cat and, you know, the, what was it called? The slit. Double slit experiment, I think.
So this stuff is theoretical based on the different physicists that you learn from or read or study. Some will have different interpretations. So this is not like proven peer-reviewed science, but there are theoretical interpretations that basically quantum mechanics exists like mystics and sages have been explaining, that we are all connected and that our thoughts create the world, and that basically our conscious influence in a ecosystem creates that ecosystem into matter. That subatomic particles choose from a wave format a matter format in a sense, and that force, that consciousness, can be directed intentionally to produce an outcome. So we can get different outcomes in reality depending on the frequency of that conscious state. Frequency being reliant on like thoughts and emotions, like where we're coming at with compassion and love. Higher frequencies, or anger and stress and anxiety, lower frequencies. So that basically consciousness is frequency and it's just going to reflect back to us what we are transmitting. It's just mirroring that law of attraction and spirituality. What you are is what you're going to get in essence. And so then again, neuroscience backs this up with called predictive coding, that we don't even look at reality. We are projecting it based on our previous belief systems and life experience. We're not interpreting. We're literally projecting. Our brain is kind of having its own simulation that it's creating live. And then,
well, so that really makes me think about the way the world is when you have so many people. Because I saw a video you were talking about escaping propaganda and understanding when you're in it, which I thought was also fascinating. But the idea of the projection of media to so many people, and then those people thinking that's reality and looking out at the world that way. Now you have a mass amount of people that can like project this reality out to kind of make it seem that this is the way
like it's real. And it's just a collective shared conscious kind of interpretation of reality. But there is no like set established reality in essence. There's nothing that is like is defined as truth for everyone in existence, because we're all going to have our own interpretation of that. Go into like a church or a mosque or an ashram or a temple and ask people their just interpretation of the message being taught that day, that sermon, that teaching. They're all going to have a different interpretation, right? And you're here with a faith that people are raised upon and this, that, but they're individuals. We're people with our own experiences and emotions, and life, you know, will either help you to interpret this in one way or another.
And so, there's one thing, I'm sorry to do this. I feel like my mind just does that. I hate to cut people off. And I love that you said that though, because yes, that's a great example about people being hearing the same thing, but sharing it and interpreting it a different way. But then when you think about what is truth in life, like there are so many few things in life that you can say, this is real. And one of those things, I don't know how many you think there are, but for me, I think it's, you know, love. I think that's truth. And I think that math and geometry, like the pattern of nature, you know, what shapes, you know, even physics and everything that we know about the design of this world and so many designs and patterns you see everywhere. You see in space, you see in like people's eyes, you know, you see all these things. So I think math and love are like two forms of truth. Like, what else can you say when you see the world that you can 100% with so much conviction say that it's true, that you can't be argued with?
Yeah. And those are, you know, both in a sense, like they help us grasp reality, but math, maybe potentially we're only understanding like a small chunk of that. Just like colors, like there's shrimp out there that see 10 more colors than we do. There's animals that hear on frequencies that we cannot interpret. So it's truth in a sense because it's what we know, but we may be only seeing a small piece of the total pie. Love is really, it's experiencing presence. So when we experience love, we're not living outside that moment. We're sharing that in that moment. So all that really is a tether, an anchor into the present moment where you feel accepted, where you are appreciative of the reality for what it is at that precise moment with that other person or with that family or whatever it is. When you asked that question, I was going to say, well, the only truth I believe that there is besides these laws, but like in experience, truth is the present moment. Like whatever you are experiencing in that moment is your truth. Like nobody can say that's not true. Like nobody can like gaslight you and be like, no, that's not, you're not experiencing that. So everybody has their truth. And that's what I teach ultimately is your consciousness interpreting reality in a way that gives you peace, that empowers you to feel love, to go out and achieve your goals, to be successful, to create the life you want for yourself. Because that's the potential you have if you know how to use your mind and spirit to create that for yourself. And that's ultimately what I teach. And that's what I've done for myself too, just to kind of wrap up my story, is that, you know, I learned all this stuff traveling all around and doing this for myself. And I started like helping other people along the way, just people that would listen that needed help. And I started creating a very different life for myself. And, you know, I went through one of the hardest seasons of life beyond even losing Jess when I met a new woman. I wanted love again. And I met this beautiful, soulful woman that you met, Susie. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. Like, I'm going to get two soulmates in one life. Like, this is pretty wild that I met love again. And we have a son together. I have my own business. I teach consciousness to corporations, like teams that are, you know, helping to bring this kind of low-key spiritual advice and teachings backed by neuroscience and quantum mechanics and all that, like to individuals. So I have like all the stuff that I'm doing within my world, but I'm living where I want to live, experiencing a beautiful life. So I'm checking all those boxes again that I was before, right? And it wasn't easy. Susie and I went through a crazy, extremely difficult season of life where I lost my dad. We had to move back to Illinois and move back to California. We lost all of our money. We bought and sold and remodeled a home and bought land and we're going to build a house and lost all that. And we lost a baby, you know, a pregnancy with a miscarriage and all of this like crazy, extreme, just circus of life for about 2 years. But the consciousness training and the understanding and the spiritual aspect and the life after death and all this stuff helped us navigate that together, where we are now exceptionally strong. We've been married for a year and a half. Our son is 4, Oliver, and he's thriving. And we've created a tremendous ecosystem of love and abundance and presence.
And to know that you met someone like her who understands that, you don't have to go like, did you have to like show her, like educate her on your journey? And did she want to learn everything about you and what you went through? And how did she get to that level that you are? Did you just find someone who was that way, or did you kind of grow together like this?
Both. But she, you know, I was broken. I was baggaged goods because I was a widower. And I, you know, at first I thought like, oh my God, who would want me and everything? Because, you know, I'm writing a novel. I ended up writing that book, Dreams of Antiquity. But like, being inspired about my, there we go. Yeah. Being inspired about my journey and, the book was rather, and having to like still navigate a lot of grief, but Susie had her hardship. She came from a marriage that was exceptionally difficult and very unhealthy in a lot of different facets. And she literally had to escape that reality. She had to flee for her life and leave with the dogs and just kind of end things completely, walk away from what she had built. And so we had to, we learned to heal together because we were both broken in the sense of still in pain and suffering. And so when we came together, there's a lot of stuff that we were so blessed to be able to figure out and to continue the heal. And then, you know, I was advancing in all this stuff and sharing this with her and teaching, but she knew stuff too. And so we were creating that reality together. And it was very, very tricky. It was honestly just as hard, if not just different kind of challenge as losing Jess, because there was just so much happening in a very small window of a season of life. But ultimately, we made it out and we're 1,000 times stronger from that. And now we're creating this, co-creating this really magical life. But again, it's what anybody can do. Like, I am not special. I'm not unique. I just was given an opportunity to learn this stuff off the grief and everything. Anybody that I teach can do this, or, you know, there's other resources out there besides myself, can do this. And this is kind of the segue, I guess, into Bitcoin, is that consciousness creates reality. And so you can wield your consciousness to create a very different experience investing in Bitcoin, being mindful of why you're doing it, what you believe, what is holding you back, what limiting beliefs do you have, what actions are you taking, what evidence are you finding. Like, I have this three-step formula to transform your life. And if you integrate that into something, anything that's important to you in life, you will maximize the efficiency to be successful. And I always say, like, success or transformation is inevitable, backed by everything scientific and spiritual that you throw at this. And so I guess it's a good time to kind of crypto.
Exactly. So when you think of, you know, crypto and Bitcoin, that's the thing. It's as a Bitcoin person, as somebody who, you know, saves in Bitcoin, who saves their, you know, time and energy spent. So we think of what Bitcoin is, you know, what money is, and is an abstraction of your time and energy spent working. And then you receive something in exchange, which is devalued and inflated away. And then, you know, it's you're chasing goalposts that keep moving. You know, so you're always chasing. You're in that fight or flight. You know, you're trying to figure out how to get ahead, and you're in this game that's rigged against you. You know, but instead of being mad at a certain party or a certain person to blame or whoever's at fault, it's human nature that is the basis of this system. And human nature, there is greed involved. It's hard. Like, even, you know, spirituality and stuff teaches that, you know, they know that you can't help it. You know, a lot of people, they're human. You can't help this. But the system was built on, you know, somebody can be in charge, somebody can manipulate something. So it's not any party's fault, any group of people's fault. It's just the way the system is built, and you can't really have trust in this system. So when you have Bitcoin, you realize that you can save your precious time and energy that you spent, you know, doing these jobs, doing these things. You could save it in something that can't be manipulated, devalued. It's immutable, and it gives you sovereignty. So you were talking about sovereignty before, and it's the sovereignty of your mind, you know, that you are in control of that. You can be given your own truth. You could be living a life that is your truth, and your truth was hard, you know, in two different separate instances, navigating that, and you lived your truth, but you have to react to that truth. So, you know, given that, you know, when you have Bitcoin, you have to be sovereign about your time and energy. You know, it's not just how you react to the situation that you're placed in this world, but also when you spend something and you receive a medium of exchange back for it, you want to have a sovereignty about that. You want to be able to know that you are in control. And that sense of control, that you know that nobody else will steal from you through inflation, it gives you a sense of peace. Yeah. You know, so that way you can feel like you don't have to keep chasing and playing the crypto casino and playing the stock market casino or playing the betting on sports casino. You can just, you know, when you value your time and you know that time is finite, you know, and that is something in this world that you when you appreciate your presence in this world, you know, and you actually want to savor those moments, you don't want to spend your time chasing a trade. You know, I think it's just, they say in Bitcoin, it's a simple life. You just save your money in something that can't be abstracted away or inflated away. And it gives you sovereignty, it gives you peace. It relaxes that nervous system because now you're not in that fight or flight stance constantly. You feel like you have a form of truth in your life. And when you think of, again, those forms of truth, love, okay, if it's math, but we don't know everything about, I've even found out we don't know how physics works. Like there's different physics in the past universe than we know here, you know, but for the most part, the Bitcoin network is secured by, you know, math and code and a giant network of energy, you know, that you cannot, there's reasons why it's at this point impossible to overtake and change, you know, but that's not the same for crypto. So that's why I make that distinguishing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So let me tell you what you're doing right now is that you are convincing me and sharing your interpretation of reality. And you're equating that interpretation based on the evidence that you have kind of, you know, extracted from your experience, from research, from understanding all this stuff. And so that perception, that perspective of reality empowers you. But I could jump on another podcast with somebody who's like, well, you know, I'm Ethereum all the way and Bitcoin's a hoax. And they're going to have a completely different interpretation. But this is the choice that we have. Does your interpretation of reality empower you? And if it doesn't, you are a victim. And if you're a victim, you're lower consciousness frequency, and that is going to cause trouble because that's where you're attracting in the quantum more aligned experiences with lower consciousness. You are elevating your consciousness into higher states of empowerment, into abundance, into safety, security, into peace, and into prosperity. And those are a higher consciousness state that you are sharing. And so in your world, in your reality, through your consciousness, that interpretation of reality is probably helping you to be successful, isn't it? And then you're sharing this. So the more people that, you know, join with this and understand, we're creating a collective conscious interpretation. So that is then creating the reality. So Bitcoin is also basically a byproduct of a collective conscious understanding of people who want sovereignty, who want safety, who don't want to be reliant on the Fed and the stock market and want to be these citizens of humanity where they are untethered. They can't be manipulated by systems that were kind of meant to enslave and control in a sense. And so through the collective, they wanted empowerment and they're creating that conscious reality for themselves. Others, piece of the pie that are trying to kind of pull us away from that or create a different reality. But the more people that come together creating that same reality, then it just takes hold because that's the power of the collective. And I have like, there's studies and things that we can talk about that people come together, like in meditation, I think a group of 1,000 people came together in Washington, D.C. and simply meditated for every day for 30 days, like for an hour or whatever, together. Hospitalization rates dropped. Crime dropped. The economy strengthened. In 30 days, people could not explain it, but it was literally tied as a byproduct to higher consciousness, creating a better reality in
that
moment.
That's amazing.
And that's what the Bitcoin community is doing. And so don't look at evidence as to why something else is so bad, because a lot of people do that. And it's a tricky little kind of gravity that will suck you in and make you angry or make you scared or make you anxious. Try to find the empowerment instead of trying to like create the villain out of something else. So that's what people sometimes do, where you start swaying back into lower consciousness.
I think what it is more so once you realize the difference, I think that you just become the type of person who doesn't want to be manipulated anymore. You just want to know that this is all, I know that I can trust this. I know that I back this system and this network. So don't try to convince me because I really don't want to live. I don't care about that. Like, I'm just outside of it. Like, so when you were talking about being part of that play. And then when you step outside and you look, you know, you're looking down from space and you see, wow, that seemed like such a big deal, you know, to me at the time. So I think what I feel to me in my experience, what Bitcoin has done for me and people that have realized similar things, it feels like when we realize that there is either manipulation or someone's trying to convince you of something or somebody's trying to get you to buy this, or, you know, it's all like sales tech, whatever it is, you don't give it your time, I think is what it is. So then you're outside of it. Like, you feel like you're looking at it like, oh, that's amusing, but I'm not going to spend my time there.
Yep. And think about it. Like, it's true in religion. It's true. Like, if people are trying to convince you to, you know, invest in a community or buy a product or whatever, when you have conviction with your beliefs and they empower you and you're not being judgmental of others, it's, you know, that's where, again, where people cross the line where they need the villain, they need the enemy. We don't need that. We don't need that to create abundance. And you're asking yourself, what do I believe about this? And when you check what you actually believe and write it down potentially, and it's all very empowering, it's all very good, it gives you literal empowerment, that's where you're kind of elevated into really high efficient states of consciousness so that you could then create that reality for yourself. And that's exactly what you're describing. You're very confident in your belief systems and things outside of that, you're just not buying into. So that's good because you don't need to. And it basically even firms up your confidence with what you believe. So that's a very powerful thing to do. And I guarantee you're seeing success in that, aren't you? Because yeah.
I'm seeing success even if now people would look at the Bitcoin price and be afraid. Like, for us, we're like, okay, great. I can just save more of my money in it and be able to collect more of it at the time. But the thing is, the thing that I've seen value from is ever since I've started this podcast and I've started sharing my voice and connecting with other people who see truth in this and share their journey and how it has helped them transform their mindset or their body, because now they want to take care of themselves so they can eat healthy and work out and actually enjoy their future because they believe that there's hope for the future now. Like, they actually have hope. Seeing how there's people like that and sharing those stories it's something that I don't wake up in the morning how you used to. And you used to think, oh, I just got to get through this week. Like, I wake up in the morning and I'm excited to get ready for my next talk. You know, I can't wait to talk to the next person. I'm not like dreading it, or I'm not dreading editing. I truly enjoy editing every single one of my videos. It's fun for me because I love what I'm doing. So I have passion for it. But seeing that the people I've met too has now, like you said, it's almost like that symbiosis where Bitcoin is this network, but because of the people using it, you know, we rely on each other and we're building it together. But we've met in real life, and a lot of the people that have met in real life now are building things, which one of them includes the Chicago Bitcoin Collective. Like, there's a group of people that actually are building. They actually bought this restaurant, and there's a chef, and it's called Fork and Coin now. So it's a place where people can go and build in Bitcoin and talk and you know what I mean, connect, but also where we can host events and somebody like George can come sing, and, you know, we can do these things. And it's even inspired. Someone else told us recently the Midwest Bitcoin Summit. He's actually having a convention center inspired by the people of the Chicago Bitcoin Collective. So you have these things where people are inspiring one another to do things.
And
it's beautiful.
And then it's rippling out beyond just that into just improving people's lives, like even just with self-care. And then, like, what are you teaching your children? And, like, you see it gains traction because it's empowering. And that's really what I think a lot of us have unfortunately stepped away from as a society is empowerment. We feel trapped. We feel imprisoned. And stepping out and having, you know, a system like Bitcoin to be of service so that we can step into our own self-empowerment and then collectively the same thing is really what humanity is missing. And so I think it's a vital component. And, you know,
I've heard people say the missing piece of the puzzle. Like, I've heard people put it that way.
I mean, it's very much, we need systems that are not reliant on, you know, on the lower conscious things of greed and power and sex and fame and all that. We need systems that are high conscious systems that are based on like compassion and unity and empathy and all that. And so that, you know, your interpretation, how you're describing it, it's very much falling in line with that. And it's going to continue to grow and spread and everything.
And two things that I think are really amazing too, is that it's not that, like, one thing I love, or two things. Okay. The first thing is I love that the price is down from its all-time high, like 45% right now. People are excited to build and to connect and do things. Nobody's scared when they're together talking about the price, afraid of where it's going to go. We're like just happy to continue putting our time that we spend working into this network that we know has a set amount. It has a finite supply, just like your time on this planet has a finite supply. That's how we correlate these things. It's your time and energy spent working in a system that also can't be increased. So anyway, that is something that I think is beautiful that people are doing during a time where normal people would look at this market and think, I don't know, because it's 45% down from its all-time high. Are you sure you trust in this thing? We're not doing it at a time where it's a new all-time high and everyone's excited. Yeah, we're just wanting you to get everyone into this because it's the next thing. We are convicted, and it shows because, you know, at the price point that it is now and the building that's happening. So that's number one. But number two, it's also the sort of, and I'd like to hear your interpretation of this, because of the creator of Bitcoin who was selfless and who wanted no recognition, no fame, didn't want riches for himself or themselves if it was a group of people or one person. This person walked away, you know, they let it grow. They didn't have to stick around and argue with other people and blame that person for being wrong or yell at that one for being not the right thing that you should. There's no persons like that is the leader of this thing sticking around telling everybody what to think or who to blame. It just does it. It runs like a clock. It runs like time runs. And you could be with it or you could not. You know, it doesn't care. It's just there. And you could use it if you want to use it. And there's no, so the people that are, it's this grassroots thing. It's not like a corporation or a venture capitalist company or marketing team that is pushing this thing. This is based on the people.
Collective belief system that has organically arrived instead of a main personality or interpretation telling people what to think. People have constructed their own belief systems on this. And then that is taking hold. And so, you know, that's a really beautiful point. It's not something that was created like even in the religious realms or something like that, where it's like, this is what to do, this is what not to do, this is how you do it. It's more of so, here, this is this thing that's flourishing and it's a concept. Now you take it and make it what you will, but it was created for the right reasons. And then, you know, without that almost prophet, that savior that created that leading the charge, you're seeing a more authentic, I think, just evolution of what this is, because people are bringing their own interpretation and it is humble. It is, has integrity. It has virtue. And so you're seeing it kind of blossom over time and seeing that, wow, it's almost a little lens into the true nature of, like, you know, humanity, of love, of that, because it wasn't created on a kind of storyline, on something that this is what you need to believe about this. And so you're just this authentic evolution and expansion of that. So it's kind of, you know, almost spiritual in its sense of a little lens into the soul of humanity wanting to create a certain experience for themselves, free from the tethers of other people with agendas.
And it's interesting that you say that too, because when you think of Bitcoin goes on blocks, you know, every 10 minutes, it's a new block. So instead of ticking clock, you know, every hour, it's got block time. So every time, you know, a new encrypted block is added to the chain, but like these things are immutable. So it's looking back into the history of every transaction ever made, every amount that someone sold, every amount that people bought. It's showing the history of who bought what and who sold what. And it's never changing. And it's like a historical archive of this thing and how people reacted to it through time. And it's not like someone can go back and rewrite that history book and say it didn't happen that way, because it's a mutable time chain. So it's just amazing that you can go look back. Anyone can. It's a transparent thing. And that's what is beautiful too about it, because it's not a secretive log of information. No one can check. Everyone in the world can check it if they want at any moment. And everyone can participate in the network too, which is beautiful, because you can feel like, hey, I want to keep this thing so that it doesn't become what centralized. You know, centralization monopolies are something that kind of over time we've seen how they just like to control again, that collective consciousness of people. So when it's something that doesn't have a control of narratives, and then you have just the way that it flourishes, the way that it's grown organically, and the way you can see through it and the transparency of it is something that is unlike what we've had.
For sure. Yeah, it's like they say, history is written by the victor, you know, that basically, no, this isn't an interpretation of reality or a manipulation of information in order to have an agenda. You know, there's been a lot of that through time and in history, of course. And so it's safe from that. And because the way it's constructed. So again, it's another, it could be somewhat larger than just a currency, somewhat more of an expression of like what structure and strategies can be implemented to help people experience sovereignty in different realms, maybe outside of economics, you know, where you're creating this thing that really evolves and the history is very clear. It can't be, you know, up for interpretation. Everybody has access. Everybody can be a part of it. And I think that in time, potentially that will be replicated outside of economies and in other spaces where it's also needed, that transparency and that sovereignty and liberation. So it really is, if you think about it, like a template for what can be created based on like the soul and the character of humanity, what people want, like loving lives, and they want to be able to take care of their families, and they want freedom from being told what to do, how to do it, and kind of enslaved in that space or restricted heavily to live life with just a natural flow.
It's so true. And I love that you're correlating it with, you know, human nature and humans, because, you know, in the system that we kind of, we feel like we don't have a voice. We feel like even if you have an opinion, no one will hear it. But in Bitcoin, if someone tries to change something that the rest of the world doesn't like, they could just vote. And the vote counts, you know, so you could vote with your miner. You can say, guess what? My miner is going to run this version that we've already been running. We don't want change. So that change won't happen because everyone's voting and their vote counts. It's actually based on a protocol.
And you're not votes and lobbying and all that stuff too. It's just like, oh yeah.
Yeah. And then it's also seeing the hope of how something like this, some of the people that are building things in this is giving me hope. I mean, I have kids. You have a kid, you know, so it's thinking about their future and what kind of world you want to build for them, knowing how much it's been broken down over time. So seeing that there's things like charities that can be built on the Bitcoin network that is based on transparency and multiple key holders that all need to unlock the vault in order to spend those funds. You can't have, you know, right now you people all the time don't want to even donate to a charity because you know that you don't know where the money's going. You know, you don't know who's actually getting helped by this money or how much percentage of those funds actually goes to see positive change in the world. But when you start to see things that are now being created for low-income public housing in Chicago, I'm actually speaking on an event about that at the end of the week. And I'm pretty excited about that. It's my first live speaking event that I'll be moderating, but it's a Bitcoin nonprofit. It's a 501c3 for low-income public housing, and it's built on Bitcoin. And it's one of those things that now you can donate to this charity, see positive change in a community because the money's actually being held there. It's not being siphoned out, you know? So it's very hopeful.
It's incredible. Yeah. And you're going to do great too, by the way. So
thank you. I was going to ask you some tips too about public speaking, because I have a couple of public speaking things coming up and I have never, besides the podcast, I haven't done it.
So you have, just think that you have. And yeah, I'll be happy. I can chat with you after and give you some stuff. But yeah, like all this is, it's just tying back to the power of consciousness. And like, whether it's collective or the individual, that we have the opportunity to, one, understand the power of consciousness. And if you study this stuff and understand that you're not enslaved, you have a lot more power. And that's honestly what a lot of people, agendas or whatever, are trying to prevent people from really understanding, is that their consciousness is this incredibly powerful force. And that if you learn how to wield that, then you can really transform your life. And that's ultimately what I teach, you know, within corporations and individuals. I have communities and everything where it's the three-step formula to improve, heal, or transform your life, a higher perspective. And I walk people through that formula because we don't know, we haven't been taught this stuff. We have a negative bias mind and brain. We're brought up in a system that does not teach this stuff. It creates worker bees. It doesn't teach consciousness. And we have to kind of suffer in life in order to figure this stuff out. Suffering is usually the gateway to transformation. And those are like the three core problems. But once you know that stuff, you can then understand that there are really applicable direct practices and tools to learn to teach yourself how to think, what to believe that's empowering, how to regulate emotions. We've talked about that, and the nervous system, how to do that live and then recenter and then, you know, experience a different kind of life for yourself where you will manifest or create the life of your dreams and a lot of success. And that can be applied to being very successful in crypto or being a great father or mother or running your own business or being a professional speaker or singer like you and Jordan. So anything, it doesn't really matter, but you can wield that power of consciousness to create your reality. And so that's, you know, that's what I'm trying to share. And again,
and that's why I'm so happy to have had you on here, because your philosophies and what you teach, you know, even though I was on this journey, but I really believe that you plant seeds. You know, and I think that those seeds that you plant teach people, you know, that they can believe in themselves, you know, and they can look outside of the fear that their ego is telling them why you shouldn't try something new and why you shouldn't attempt to do something that makes you happy, you know, something that could be a passion, you know, something that you enjoy, you know, instead of just doing the worker bee thing and following the path that you're supposed to follow, because that's, you know, what life tells you.
Yep. And that's, you can break free. Really, you really can. And so, yeah, anybody listening out there, whether you're into Bitcoin or just wanting to create a different experience for yourself, you can kind of check out my stuff. I'm sure Stacey will share that. But there's a lot of resources out there outside of myself. But, you know, I have a good extraction for this three-step formula that really will teach you just how to step into your highest potential and like just love yourself. And that will carry you through life in a completely different way, where it will be so much more rewarding and fulfilling, and success will be a byproduct of that, honestly. And so that's ultimately what, at the end of the day, that I'm teaching, is that you're kind of understanding your own conscious power, how to love yourself as you are, and that will be the wind in your sails to create a very beautiful life.
That is so true. And I love that, you know, when you're talking to the people that want to come hear you speak, it's not usually people that think they have their whole life together and they don't need any help. It's usually people coming to you because they are looking for something. They're looking for some sort of answer, for some sort of help. And when you think about, this is like the last connection I'll make to what Bitcoin is, but when you said you have to go, when you feel like you've experienced that extreme pain in life and that's what wakes you up or gets you to see, you know, to be present and to actually appreciate things in life, it's the point where I've noticed many people who have found Bitcoin, it comes at a point where you have no choice and you feel you have been broken, you have been cheated, you have been stolen from, you have been you've lost businesses, you know, things have happened along your life where you feel you don't have any control and you are hopeless. And when you start to come across Bitcoin and you find it, it's like most people won't even try to pay attention to it because they're not looking for it. They don't need it yet. Like people haven't been, if you are in the top 1% of the world, or if you're one of the people who isn't living paycheck to paycheck, you're probably not going to be looking for an answer yet to this inflation problem. But the people that find it are because you have to start looking for an answer, you know? So it's like you have to break down.
Yeah, that makes, yeah, that lands very, very well. And it's a little bit of, you know, like me on my journey or others where you find spirituality or you find self-help or you find personal development or whatever, because you're suffering so much. And in the same landscape, people are suffering economically. And so this almost, you know, it's almost like a faith system, a belief system that is also an actual structure can be just not your like saving grace, but like a new entry into, again, that sovereignty where you, as the collective, you're freeing yourselves of a lot of that suffering through this opportunity and this conscious structure.
When you're calling it a new, when you call it something that you know, that ego thing, again, going back to the idea of like looking back from the outside, it's not part of this financial current system. It's an escape from that financial system. So you're like in a different bubble, you know, looking back at that bubble and thinking, I could just go over here. You know, you don't have to be in that current one. And what it is about Bitcoin too, again, the creator who disappeared, who's insane, you know, part of Bitcoin, you know, the history of it, but just knowing that it is backed by, and this is the last point I'll make on it, and then we can wrap up. But like, it is backed by energy. So there's a global network of computers that run the network. And then the idea is that it is very expensive to run these computers. There are warehouses full of them. But again, because of human greed and companies and corporations that are running these machines, in order to want to preserve more of their profits, they would want to find a green solution or an alternate solution to run these miners so that they could preserve more profits. So in turn, it turns the world green because people are trying to find more ways to preserve their profit. They're spending half of it on electricity and stuff like that. So it's kind of a beautiful thing because it is a valuable thing to that's connected to, you talked about physics. It's the law of thermodynamics, you know, connected to energy. And you have to use energy to make this thing, you know, to mine this thing, to collect this thing. It's not just printed out of thin air. It's not a button in the computer. It's backed by energy, but it could also have the power to transform the world into a better way of using energy so that we are not destroying the earth, sort of.
Yeah, I love that. You don't consider that. You're really, you know, thinking this through, like the ripple effect of this into, it's an evolution of even energy of like, we have to kind of start thinking of how can we be more efficient creating energy, not on the old ways that are too expensive. And so it's pushing industry.
Innovation and, yeah.
Adapt into innovation. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to talk to you about some tips about Bitcoin after this, and I'll give you some speaking tips, but.
Thank you. Yes, this has been so incredible. I am so happy. Thank you for listening to this part of it. I'm so happy to hear your take on it. And I'm sure that other people listening will love to hear your take from a mindset coach and knowing, you know, explaining to us the behavior of the collective Bitcoin network and what we see in Bitcoin. And it gives you something to think about. It'll be interesting to hear going forward some thoughts that you have about it or any other connections you make, because that's the most fun part to me is seeing how there's this new parallel system and how it connects to sovereignty in all different ways for yourself, for your family, and for the world. So those connections are really fun to make, and I really appreciate you making those connections with me.
It was really cool to think about that in that space, Paul. But you initiated that. I was just kind of telling you what you're talking about, but you're already on it. You're figuring all that stuff out. So I was just interpreting what you were saying. Well, thank you, Stacey, so much for having me. And for anybody else out there, you know, there's a bunch of free resources I have on YouTube and all this other stuff that if you're just into kind of understanding more about yourself, you can check out.
Yes, and this is his book also. Don't forget this, Dreams of Antiquity. This is the book that you were talking about that you wrote after that journey that you went on, and it's beautiful. And I got a
new one coming out this year too that'll be the actual transformative like self-help book too. So lots of stuff out and communities.
Do you have a title for that book?
It is going to be similar to what I'm using now for like my programs and everything. The Higher Perspective, a 3-step formula to improve, heal, or transform your life.
That's amazing. And I will definitely be adding that whenever that book comes out. I'll be adding it to the video and I will be adding all of your links. So everything's going to be in here for everybody to come find you. And thank you so much, Joe. It's so nice talking to you again.
Stacey, keep doing what you're doing. You're doing awesome. And good luck.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too.